This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
If I were the devil, to the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That is, of course, legendary broadcaster Paul Harvey. He had this great address called If I Were the Devil. And it really is an eerie yet correct prediction of where things could go. You'll hear more of that. I'm going to play some of that with you. He did that, oh, I forget how many years ago now, probably over 50 years. And I also want to share with you another piece of audio from Bishop Fulton Sheen that I came across. He had a prophecy 50 years ago as well, just in terms of where we are as a culture. And the reason that resonates with me, I saw an op-ed recently. It was actually in the Los Angeles Times where I saw it. And it said, why America's record godlessness is good news for the nation. And I thought, what is this person saying? And before I get to that, let me back up. And if you miss this, you can go to my podcast and just look for Father Paul Solons. I had a discussion with Father Paul Solons, who's a very gifted sociologist, on a new Gallup survey that showed that for the first time since they ever started asking the question back in 1937, that fewer than half of Americans say they belong to a church. I mean, that's staggering. That's stunning. That's a major shift in how we Americans live our lives. And it shows that we're becoming an increasingly godless and very secular society. And I have great concern about where secularism is going to lead. I'm sure you didn't need a Gallup survey to tell you that that was happening, though. I'm sure if you look around, maybe you see it in your own family, you know that that's a reality. You know, there are trends all around us. In fact, that op-ed that I saw, let me share with you what they said. They make the headline again is what really grabbed me. It said, why America's record godlessness is good news for the nation. So they see those numbers as being good news. I thought, well, what kind of case are you making? And as you probably imagine, as I read it, the author's a guy named Phil Zuckerman. He's an associate dean at Pitzer College near Los Angeles. And he has a completely, completely secular point of view, and he regards societies without religion as being the best, right? They're the best kind, because he claims this, and I want to quote him. He says, quote, secular people, when compared to their religious peers, they're far more likely to understand and respect the scientific method, which results in their increased willingness to get vaccinated, for instance, and to adhere to empirically grounded health recommendations, a national orientation that saves lives. Secular people are more supportive of sex education with reduced unwanted pregnancies and sexually transmitted diseases, end of quote. Now, I don't have to break that down for you. I mean, it's very obvious, right, where the flaws in that thinking are, where the errors are. You know, you can see his point of view and why it's, I believe it's wrong. The author of Society Without God, What the Last Religious Nations Can Tell Us About Contentment, also claims, and I want to quote this, research shows that secular people are more likely to support women's reproductive rights, right, universal health care, gay rights, environmental protections, death with dignity. And look, I could decode some of these. You're talking about abortion, talking about death with dignity as euthanasia, you know, gun safety legislation, treating drug abuses as a medical rather than criminal problem, all of which serve to increase dignity, liberty, and the well-being in America, end of quote. So that seems to be a pretty skewed look at the issue. So we contacted Dr. Patrick Fagan, who founded and runs the Marriage and Religion Research Institute at Catholic University of America, to get his perspective on this. And he very graciously was willing to join us. You can join us, too, if you want to get in on this conversation. The number's toll-free for you. It's 888-914-9149. If you want to get plugged into their organization, too, the Marriage and Religion Institute, go to marri.us for more info. Hey, Doctor, thanks for your time. Good afternoon.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Drew. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's start with Zuckerman. Let's start with this idea that secularism and prosperity, that they go hand in hand. And I love some of the things he said, because I could not disagree with that more. I mean, look, the Catholic Church has never been opposed to scientific method. You know, in fact, the founder of the Big Bang was a Catholic priest, and you can go through the history of the church. But let's talk about Zuckerman, his whole idea that secularism, prosperity, that, the, you know, without one or the other, you know, you're not going to have this. Hey, explain that to me. I mean, why does he make the case, and what's flawed about the idea that secularism and prosperity go hand in hand?
Well, you know, on the surface case, he's got a number of strong countries he can point to: the Scandinavian countries, Ireland, Switzerland, you know, and all across Europe where the social democratic, you know, the advanced social democratic regimes are there. These are all relatively small countries, homogeneous, so easier to run, smaller. They have a sense of unity, and they're prospering. You know, they've got the technological advances and all the rest. But if you dig into Zuckerman himself, and then there are many people like him, what disturbs me most professionally is that phrase you used, where that people like this are more open to the scientific method.
Right.
He is abusing the scientific method. I'm not saying there's no data on his side. There are, and I know the data. But he is not at all presenting all the contrary data, which any scientist would do, any scientist worth his salt. And he's touting the social sciences while abusing them. And for me, as a social scientist, that gets my goat.
Yeah, I could imagine.
I can understand a lot of what he says, but this is not social science. You're pulling the wool over people's eyes. Yeah. Let me give you an example.
Sure.
The U.S. is the country with the best data on the impact of religion on people's lives. We got eight major federal surveys going on for years and years and years. It's replete with deep information. You look at all of those. Now, Zuckerman is married and has three children. So I'm assuming it's his first wife and it's a good intact marriage. But if you look at these federal surveys, that group of which he is a member, those who are intact, married, but don't worship at all, are always much further down the ranking than the intact, the same family that worships weekly. So you contrast those who worship weekly with those who don't worship at all, both married. Huge difference. Every single time, on every single measure in the U.S. federal data system.
Wow.
Come on, Zuckerman, put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I love
That's
it.
The Irish have been coming out.
I love it. I absolutely love it. What about his presupposition that a secular society is better than a religious one?
For that, you've got to understand the guy himself. And you can go into Wikipedia and then into some of the books, et cetera, that he has written and contributed to. And he's quite upfront. He's a secularist. He wants all the benefits of religion, but, and he's very explicit about this, he's trying to get all this, but he does not want God in the picture at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true.
He is all for removing God from the presence of man. And he's explicit. You see that in a number of his writings, and you can go online and tap into a number of his interviews, like the LA Times on that op-ed has hyperlinks to some of these, and you can go to them and you can see it there. He's quite upfront. So he's essentially an ideologue. I'm sorry to say this, and he, you know, I'd love to have him here and debate him back and forth through the data. But I think he's an ideologue using partial social science to make his pull the wool over people's eyes.
Yeah, it's really true, because he points away from these atheistic societies of communism, and what a great example, right? What happens to a nation without God, or Nazism? And he points instead towards what he calls these organic secularization societies, like what's happening in Japan, or as you point out, the Scandinavian countries. Can you draw that distinction? I mean, is there a difference? I mean, nations that have no God, does it deal with their political ideology, or what do you make of the point that he makes there, why he doesn't point towards communist countries, but rather to Japan and Scandinavian countries?
Well, here's what I would say to that whole observation of his in general. Look, we in the church, we're quite used to this. Take religious orders in the church. When they become prosperous, they have the danger of falling away. You know, and the church is full of reforms within the religious orders, because in obeying God's commandment, like, they prosper, Christ didn't promise prosperity. Actually, he promised the cross, you know, and those who embrace the cross are those who make the church grow, and those who get fat and, you know, rest on their laurels and have the good times of fine food, et cetera, et cetera, and nice buildings, but don't use it apostolically. I'm all for those things. Don't get me wrong. God bless the great monks who've done great beauty and the great universities, et cetera. But we all need the spirit of poverty. And it's very interesting, actually. The church is not afraid of this. Pope Benedict repeatedly in his writings, you remember, he was foretelling.
Sure.
The church is going to get smaller. The zeitgeist of the age. People are comfortable. Technology is adding massively to our comfort, eliminating poverty. Sure, who needs God?
I could not agree more. Benedict XVI, of course, coined that great phrase, the dictatorship of relativism. And I think we are seeing that today in a massive way. And you see people who champion that same cause. I worry about the future sometimes when I see this godlessness in our culture.
Zuckerman knows where it's leading, and he sees the difficulty even in his own direction. In one of his other writings, not in the op-ed thing, but in tracking him down. The one big area, and it's huge, where he sees the difficulty is infertility rates. He knows his folk are going to die out. They don't reproduce.
Yeah.
They don't worship the... And though, you know, those who worship God weekly have the highest fertility rates in the world. And this holds globally across all cultures and all religions. So they're dying out, and he sees that, and there's an offhand comment. He doesn't make much of it. He backs away from it quickly, but it's there. So he's honest in that direction. The other thing he's concerned about, he is saying that without religious community and religious beliefs, will the morals turn essentially to a more radical form of individualism, where people are now isolated? He'd love to have community, but without God. He'd love to have people getting together to talk about morals, but without God. So he sees the difficulty. We've seen this time and time again. So this cycle works its way down. Look, I once met an Irish, I lived down in the Washington area, and I was calling into the National Shrine, and a nun in a brown habit got out of the car beside me and asked, was pointing towards Catholic University, and she was looking for one of the departments. No, I'm from Ireland, and from her accent, from the West. I said, I'll tell you, Second Sister, well, what part of the West of Ireland are you from? And it was County Mayo. And we got talking, and then she said to me, and we were talking, bemoaning what was happening in Ireland, which was probably one of his top 10 countries. You know, Ireland now has become rich. Well, back around 1890 or 1900, in that period, there was a famous Irish priest, great writer and a good parish priest, but quite involved in social justice issues, real, you know, where the poor are being abused and all the rest. She said, do you know that Canon Sheehan prophesied? I said, no, I didn't know that. And I didn't. I knew who Canon Sheehan was. He said, yeah, he did. He prophesied back then, one day Ireland will become rich. It's now counted among the top 10 in the world. Wow. Ireland will become rich and gradually fall away from the faith. And then one morning, wake up and not like itself and return. But, you know, the whole thing of the down, it's almost like an alcoholic. He's got to bottom out before he starts coming back up.
That's so true. You got to hit rock bottom. Well, it raises an important question for us here in America. I mean, we're founded with Christian principles, if you will. And I think 86% of the country professes a belief in Christianity. It's over 80%. And yet we see this number of people who have left the Catholic faith in particular, the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S's, those who have no religious affiliation, say, I don't need institutionalized church. Yeah, there might be a God, but I don't need to go to Sunday Mass. I don't need to practice. We're seeing an acceptance and a rise in relativism. Does that come with wealth? I mean, we've been a very wealthy country, but what's causing the rise in relativism we're seeing in the country, the loss of faith in this nation? And, Doctor, what does it portend for the future? What do you see coming in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
Continued decline, unless, and the big unless, and I think your experience is probably similar to mine. During this COVID period, I can see more and more people at daily mass, greater devotion, more, adoration of the Blessed Eucharist. There's a ferment on out there. And what will save the country are saints. And there are people who really live their life, and it begins to transform them. And we get a little more like the early Christians who didn't have missionaries and didn't have, public churches and all the rest in that period of greatest growth. What caused the church's growth were people who, when others looked at them, as they said, it's almost like, I don't know what Kool-Aid they're drinking, but whatever it is, I want it. They were attracted to them because of their sanctity, because God was present in them. You see that when you get a great parish priest or curate, who is a real man of God, but after a while, you see a lot more people coming to church. The same is true of a religious, the same is true of a couple. And of course, within the Catholic family, we've had a massive apostasy on the sexual by the parents.
Yeah.
The level of contraception, which is a turning away from God and saying, look, I don't want to co-create with you. I'll have this amount, that's it, I'll take my pill, or I'll cut my tube, snip, snip, and that's it. This sort of stuff seeps out from the parents to the kids, and the kids say, this doesn't make sense. There's nothing attractive here. I'm not giving myself to this.
Yeah, that's well. I guess the thing I learned today, and my takeaway from my 3 hours on the air so far, is a stat that you threw out. I never heard of that before, where you said those who regularly worship have higher fertility rates, and it crosses all religions. That is amazing to me, and it also speaks to the role of faith in our country. And I'd love your take on it. What role does faith play in the success of a nation? Because I know we were talking about this LA Times article, and the author there dismisses, of course, the real contributions of religious believers in the country, working with the homeless, setting up food shelves. He ignored health care and education and a host of other things. So to this point, what role does faith play in the success and the future of a nation, especially ours?
Huge. It's huge. And if you look at the data on all of those things you talk about, homelessness, et cetera, all those things, who give the most, who take care of the poor the most, it's not their only people, but they are the most. On all of those things is those who live a life of faith, are the most generous, give the most, contribute the most, volunteer the most. In every way, it's the, these people are the yeast in the dough, and they cause it to rise.
Yeah.
And, our Lord also said it, like if the salt loses its savor, what's left? You just throw it out, cast it under feet, and people walk on it,
Right.
So we're in that cycle.
Yeah, no doubt.
It'll be people of faith will revive America if it's revived.
Yeah, that's a big F. And let's pray it is, all right? And I know we're doing our part. I know you're doing your part there, too. The Marriage and Religion Research Institute at the Catholic University of America. People want to find you. What's the best way to go? It's just marri.us?
That's it. That'll get you right to it. And you can then sign up. We do weekly. Actually, we do a lot of social science, that illustrates divine natural law. We put three findings out every week. We do a lot of other stuff. But these are quick, snippy, focused.
I love
it.
Well, I have to have you back. I really enjoyed our conversation today. I love your insight and your eloquence. So let's plan on connecting. I'm going to be checking out that website. We'll link over to it on our Facebook or our Twitter page as well for you, Doc.
God bless. Take care.
Amen to that. All right. God bless you. That's it's Dr. Patrick Fagan. He runs and he actually founded the Marriage and Religion Research Institute at CUA there, Catholic University of America. Again, it's marri.us, and you can check him out there. I love what he had to say. We do live in a culture where if you look at these numbers, stunning. I love the caller who made the connection. Hey, we see a decrease in belief in true presence. And of course, we have no problem, giving the president the Eucharist. We see people leaving the church, not truly understanding this reality. This is what happens. I really believe that when we reject God, the mind becomes darkened. Pope Benedict XVI, as Dr. Fagan pointed out, he coined a very famous phrase. And it was called the dictatorship of relativism. You've heard that over and over again. I think you agree. We see this current flowing in our culture today where everything is relative, right? Nothing is definitive. because the ultimate measure is always self. If I, you know, think that I am a woman, I can be a woman, right? We everything is relative. Everything centers around personal whims. It centers around self-gratification. You know what the reality is? That's backwards. That's wrong. Rather than freedom to choose good from evil, today the world sees freedom as freedom to do what is evil. So you and I are living in a time where things are twisted, where they're distorted, where, you know, what is right is now looked at like it's wrong and vice versa. That's where we are today. The world has everything backwards. It has everything backwards. And the question is, how do we get to this point? You know, if you think about it, as a society, we have no one else to blame but ourselves. Our society today, we have this attitude of silence. There's this great fear. It's always frustrated me. This fear of offending someone else, right? Oh, I don't want to offend their beliefs. You know, I don't want to speak the truth. I don't want to offend that because, you know, I don't want to be perceived as being intolerant. You know, people are going to look at me like I'm intolerant if I speak the truth about the Lord being present in the Eucharist and the fact that Joe Biden should not be receiving it, or that this person is a man, not a woman. Bruce Jenner, I'm sorry. You know, and I hope that doesn't sound callous, but it's the truth. And when we become so fearful of being perceived as, you know, intolerant, what's the result? We see God stripped from our government institutions, from our educational institutions. Look what's happening in our schools. He's been banned now from the public square. Oh, I don't want to offend anybody. We see same-sex unions and all sorts of immoral behavior. That's fine. That's normal. That's how they want to live. What's wrong with that? So as a people who govern our lives by a set of moral codes, and we should, by a set of Christian values, you and I have a duty and a moral obligation to stand up and let our voice be heard, even when it is unpopular. And that's my challenge to you today. Speak the truth to your kids. Speak the truth to your friends. I know it's hard. I know it's hard. Believe me. But and I'll leave you with this thought. Look, it's not intolerant. It is never intolerant to tell the truth. It's not intolerant to espouse the fundamentals of natural law and the truth of God's law. That is not intolerant. That's loving. You don't always have to be tolerant when it comes to telling the truth. You don't. You got to draw a line in the sand. You have to call evil, evil, and wrong, wrong. We can't say, well, it's only wrong if this person thinks it's wrong. You can't remain silent out of fear of offending another person because we feel some sort of personal reprisal. Look at what silence and tolerance has allowed to happen throughout history. It was silence and fear that allowed the construction of the concentration camps by Nazi Germany and the murder of 6 million Jews and Christians. It was silence and tolerance in Holland that allowed the establishment of euthanasia. And now today, this deadly practice may be expanding to its sick and mentally challenged children. And look, it goes on and on. As I said, I'll leave you on that thought. You know, in fact, G.K. Chesterton once said that tolerance is the virtue of the man without convictions. Be a person with conviction and speak the truth.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio, 24/7 on the Relevant Radio archives. Just click on Drew Mariani Show page.
Hey, it's great to be with you today. Thank you for joining me. Always a delight to be able to speak the truth and share with you, really to take a look at life through the eyes of our faith and all that's unfolding around us. Hey, Patrick, do me a favor. Can you open your mic? You have to share with everyone what you were just sharing with me at the break about Bruce Jenner. I mentioned Bruce Jenner, the former decathlon winner. I think it was the 76th Olympics. What is Bruce now, he goes by the name Caitlyn Jenner, doing?
Yeah, he's considering a run for governor of California, assuming that the recall goes through.
Wow. So Newsom will probably, they're going to recall him. What do you think the likelihood of Bruce Jenner running is?
I have no idea. But then obviously Arnold Schwarzenegger took advantage of the recall election in 2003 and he became governor. So, yeah, I mean, and definitely if the recall goes through and Jenner's on the ballot, name recognition right there.
And a lot of money behind Jenner. Hey, thank you, Patrick, for bringing us up to speed on all of that. If you're just joining me, too, I do want to talk a little bit. I want to share with you some audio from Paul Harvey and also from Fulton Sheen. Hey, I saw a piece that Cardinal Burke, he made a comment. And then I thought of Paul Harvey and I thought of Bishop Sheen. Let me share with you what His Eminence said. Cardinal Burke said this. He says, regarding the end times, somebody asked him about where we are in the culture, the time, the signs that we're seeing, pandemics, natural calamities, comets flying by. And Cardinal Burke, he explained, look, the Lord forbids speculating about the end times because, you know, only the Father knows the date. But he said this. He said, however, in the face of the tremendous evils which we are entering the life of the church, he says, it looks like we are in those times. You know, and he warned. He warned of private revelations, you know, observing that we're in the final times. Nobody knows the day or the hour. It's not healthy to obsess about this. But you take a look at where we are in the culture. You know, there have been priests, there's been visionaries, there's been bishops, there has been commentators like Paul Harvey. Millions of people used to listen to Paul Harvey. He was broadcast over 1,200 radio stations nationwide. And back on April 3rd, 56 years ago, in a couple days, he had a very prescient warning for this country. He said this April 3rd, 1965. And I thought today I would share just a little bit of what he had to say. In my opinion, it's almost eerie what he predicted.
And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. What'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure.
We know it's so amazing.
In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Yeah, so amazing. To me, I'm always struck by that. That was 56 years ago, 1965. He went ahead and made that prediction. And you take a look at what he said. I mean, so true today. Archbishop Fulton Sheen, he foresaw dire world conditions in the future. And again, I think Bishop Sheen was a true prophet. He's going to be beatified. Of course, he gave us hope. He told us where to cast our anchor for victory. But he wasn't afraid to speak the truth, even when it was politically incorrect, when it was intolerant. You know, people were also not afraid to hear it. And he was very inspirational. He was on television in the 50s, and he had a series that ran. His series was called Life is Worth Living. It ran from February in 1952 to, I think, April of 55. And then again, I think ABC carried him to 57. And he talked about his talks in general are really timeless. They're prophetic. And one of his talks addresses the world that we live in today. Now, again, this is well over 50 years. Listen.
The first characteristic of the new violence of our day is what we will call elitism. Namely, there is a dominant minority that makes a lot of noise and that uses violence to force its will upon others. They're revolutionists without a program. They only know what they're against. They do not know what they're for. The kind that will rifle desks, destroy property, burn homes, do anything to enforce their will. Satanism is behind it too. This is the third characteristic of it. The world is built on order. There's a plan. So scientists are able to discover the laws of the universe. And in discovering the laws of the universe, men find harmony. This harmony and order had to come from somewhere. It came from God. What is the essence of Satanism? The essence of Satanism is the destruction of that order. The order of law, the order of morality, order of religion, the order of ethics, anything that you please. Believe me, fellow Americans, I tell you that before the flood, in the book of Genesis we read, and in the days of Noah, there was violence on the earth.
Yeah, that's the Venerable Fulton Sheen. He continued on by saying this. He was offering perspectives on where our culture needs to go in order to be freed from the violence. And really, he was speaking about the cancel culture that we're living in today. Listen.
All of the violence that happens in our country is a fever graph. Read it. And it points to a decay in our civilization. How are we going to get out of it? I tell you one thing that we have to do. We have to realize maybe why the eagle is our national symbol. The eagle always builds its nest high in the mountain crevices. When the young are hatched, the eagle pushes its young over the nest. And they fly down to what to eaglet eyes must seem like sudden death. And just before the young eagle crashes, the mother eagle swoops down from its nest, down to the abyss and catches the young. And flies up into the sky, swoops from out it again, and repeats the process until the bird has learned to fly. Moses saw that, and he wrote, as the eagle stirs among the young, so does God stir among the nations. Maybe God is stirring us, bringing us to the brink of danger, in order that we might begin to examine ourselves and restore the dignity of man.
I love that. Maybe God is stirring us, bringing us to the brink of danger in order that we might begin to examine ourselves and restore the dignity of man. And he would go on to say, and belief in God. I have to take a short pause. When I come back, Tom Hoops will be joining me. We're going to take a look at how we do just that. Stay with me.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Despite the sin and corruption in the world and church, one thing remains true. Jesus is Savior and King. Yesterday, today, and forever. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you know, you can hear Paul Harvey or His Eminence Cardinal Burke, or you can listen to Fulton Sheen, or you could look at the signs of the times and think, oh, what is going on? I'm concerned about the future. The real question for you isn't whether or not these are difficult times. The real question is, what are you going to do with the time that you have, with the racial unrest, with the political division, with the divisions even within the church? You know, where do you go? Just I'll leave this one pearl on your table, and we can talk about it with Tom Hoops. Something to think about. You know, back during the Spanish flu, during the last great global pandemic, and tens of millions of lives were taken in that. That was 100 years ago. Padre Pio, he was asked what was going on And he said this, Padre Pio, the great stigmatic, the man who bore the wounds of Christ, was raised to the altars. He died in 1968, lived in Italy in San Giovanni. He said the current scourge in the ends of God is to bring man closer to divinity as its main goal. So he says, don't fear. Don't fear then that iniquity will, you know, come to crush righteousness, but iniquity itself will crush itself and justice will triumph. It was a hopeful message to bring man closer to divinity. That's God's main goal, right? And how do we respond to that invitation? I'm joined right now by a very gifted writer. His name's Tom Hoops. He's in residence at Benedictine College in Kansas. And he asked the question from a slightly different perspective. He looked at the time of the great Pope John Paul II, Carol Voltiwa. And he grew up in very difficult times, early adulthood. He had to survive Nazi oppression. He lived under the Soviet, oppression of his day. He faced, I think, probably even more difficult times than ours. So how did he respond? There's a great piece he wrote, and I'll see if we can link over to it as well. But I want to welcome him to the program and thank him for his patience. Tom, good afternoon.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Thank you for your writing, too. I enjoy it, and I think you do a phenomenal job. Let's talk about John Paul a little bit, if we could, because that's the piece I read a little bit earlier today, and I thought you were right on the money. The 20th century, well, it was a dark century. If you think about the evils that rose in that century and what people had to endure, remind us how difficult the times were that Carol Voltiwa lived in. And some people may not know. I saw a stat where like 80% of kids don't know about the life of John Paul II or not even sure who he is today. So maybe for those who aren't that familiar with the period he lived in or who he was, bring everybody up to speed.
Yeah, no, oh my gosh. I mean, we faced Pelosi and Biden, a lot of people are worried about that. But he faced Hitler and then, the Stalinists who came in after Hitler. You know, we have all sorts of troubles that we're facing. But he had Auschwitz literally 40 minutes away from his home built, right? And then so the Nazis ran his country until the country started to celebrate Liberation Day. Now, Liberation Day was a communist holiday that was obligatory while they wiped out a lot of the Catholic holidays that the country was used to, right? The Nazis were followed by the Eastern Bloc communists. And then, we face our, people getting mad at us on Facebook. And I don't want to diminish that. A lot of families have suffered real pain over kind of political and religious disagreements. But what he faced was, betrayal by friends to communist authorities and people who would disappeared in the middle of the night. You know, we see that a lot of our institutions are being captured by the woke culture. He had his institutions captured by murderous Stalinist atheistic thugs in Poland. So he faced all these terrible things. So what did he do in the face of all this? Well, what he did was he started this group, which is roughly translated milieu. But basically, he just started to hang out with these lay people, and he started this intense kind of evangelization of friendship. So they would go on trips together. They would put on plays together. They would have little reading groups about Thomas Aquinas together. And they basically said, okay, you know what? The communists took away all of our institutions. We don't have all the stuff that we used to rely on that the church had. What do we have? We have love of neighbor. We have, Christian love for one another. And that basically built a framework of friendships, this network of friends, as George Weigel calls it in his book about John Paul II, that was the groundwork for the Solidarity Party that ended up gaining political power after the communism finally fell. And also it was the first version of World Youth Days, which, oh my gosh, has done so much good for the world. You know, here at Benedictine College, we have, our head of college ministry was a World Youth Day vocation for many years. Our abbot, is a World Youth Day vocation. And then there's all the married World Youth Day vocations who are sending their kids here now. So this, what he did by responding with love in the face of a very trying time, really transformed not just the history of Poland, but the history of the world and your personal history and mine.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, I was reading about what the Hoops family does. And, to make this real, I think, well, John Paul was a saint. Our times, they're a little bit different. But still, what can I do to transform the culture or make a difference in the world? It seems overwhelming. Share with us, if you could, some of the things that you and your wife are doing or have done with the Hoops family ambitious schedule of summer cookouts and some of the other things you do.
That's right. Well, we did, and we did this in Connecticut. We've done it here at Kansas many years. We couldn't because of the pandemic, of course, but we have this. You bring something to our house, and we will, you know, you can cook it. I'll cook it for you on the grill every Saturday over the summer. So you don't have to keep a calendar to know which days are on and which days are off. We even had it so that if we weren't going to be around on a Saturday, we'd have a good friend kind of open up the house and run it for us. And this was an incredible event. So the people came, you know, people we didn't know would come, but they were kind of friends of friends, kind of in circles. There'd be great discussions. We had people find jobs there. We had people find spouses there. We had people find their faith there or rediscover their faith. So it's just this simple friendship. You don't have to go out and learn a bunch of arguments about how to counter this, that, or the other ideology. You just have to love other people and love your neighbors and realize that the people around you are, you know, facing a lot of the issues you have, and they are open to change just as much as you were, right? And, you know, I think that kind of, you know, things tend to backfire on the devil. And I think that a lot of the bad that happened in this pandemic, and I'm well aware of the difficulties and the church didn't come off looking great in the pandemic. I'm well aware of the difficulties of the pandemic. But one thing that happened was that people discovered the Bible in the Year podcast. They discovered your show. They discovered Bishop Robert Barron. They discovered all this great content that's out there. And I keep running into people who say, oh my gosh, my faith was transformed by the pandemic. Suddenly, instead of going to mass, I was at my parish, I was watching all this stuff on watching Father Mike or Bishop Robert Barron. And I think we're really ripe for a huge upswing in the faith after the pandemic. I mean, statistically, people are saying that the pandemic helped their faith. But then on the ground, if you think the number of people who are listening to Bible in the Year podcast, the number of people who are soaking themselves in the Word of God, which never leaves, God and comes back without accomplishing what it was sent for, the number of people who are soaking themselves in Scripture has got to have an effect. So what our job to do at this point is to do what John Paul II did, be not afraid, and just start inviting people over and reaping some of the benefits.
I love that. And you're seeing the fruit of it, as you point out. You know, Rob Dreher, he documents similar things in a book that he wrote. It was called Live Not by Lies, where people in communist countries built these human networks. So that really is important. I mean, how do you suggest that we start that here in our own country? Just start with friends, you start with family. It'd be nice to see pockets of them all over the country. We'd like to see a lot of Catholics doing that. If I was near you, I'd love to come over. I'll bring some ribeyes. All right, and you can grill them.
Come over. That'll
I'll
be put fun. It on there. You might want to help me out so I don't burn it.
Yeah, medium rare, please.
So that, I think the Saturday barbecue thing has been extremely helpful for people who don't feel really comfortable going to a Bible study or going to a reading group. I think there's a lot of people who would love to go to a reading group or a Bible study. You know, what the Pope would do is he'd go on hikes. He'd put on dramatic, shows, which I know friends of ours do out in Connecticut. You know, whatever your interest is what you should do. Don't get yourself into some weird headspace where you have to be something that you're not. Amen. Just go out and, like John Paul II said, become who you are and invite people along for the ride.
Hey, well, look, I want you to keep up your great work. I appreciate, as I said, your writing. If people want to follow you or get connected, Tom, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, check out thegregorian.org, which is the website here at the college for kind of our blog site. Thegregorian.org is where you can find the stuff that we're putting out. And we have a whole plan that you'll see unfolding about all of this.
Well, that sounds awesome. I only have a minute or two left, so I want to just thank you for being here. Let's catch up soon, okay? And keep evangelizing. I know God's blessing your work. So happy Easter to you.
Great. You too.
That's Tom Hoops. I said, writer in residence there at Benedictine College in Kansas. And check out our Twitter. Follow us at Drew Mariani Show and on Facebook as well. My thanks to Jake Moore, to Patrick Alog, to Tom Siskevich, all those who helped make this program a reality. Cale Clark is coming straight ahead. Stay tuned for him. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, God bless. Have a great day.